We're so glad that we could make this happen. I mean, I feel like we were just playing around on the podcast,
right?
And now this is coming to fruition. So it's so good. This is the first time we've done something in front of a live audience.
We just wanted to have the opportunity to hang out with you guys. You know, your feedback and your energy for the podcast is really, really important. So without further ado, you people, Kenya Barish, Jonah Hill,
Lauren London,
Nia Long, Eddie Murphy, and then they got the white people. So we'll watch it right now. Where are we
going? This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
All right.
Okay, wait.
Let's keep it all the way real. Hold on. So raise your hand if you liked the movie. If you can literally.
Wow.
Okay. Raise your hand if it was all right. Raise your hand if it was whack.
I knew you.
Jomie's funny one.
So that's my second time seeing it.
And you, what'd you think?
The first time I saw it, I either called you or texted you immediately, and I said, I don't think you're going to like the movie.
Right.
Second time I watched it, I'm kind of like, okay, it was better than I thought.
Right.
I want to know, because the first time I saw the movie, I saw it with a group of people, and it was silent. Nobody really laughed. Nobody clapped. But you guys did. I'm curious, man, I'll ask you the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any scenes, because the reason it was quiet when I watched it is because a lot of people were uncomfortable. And they didn't know. It was a room full of journalists. And I don't think they knew whether to laugh, clap, just have any type of emotion.
Yeah.
Did any part, any scene in it make you uncomfortable?
No.
Well, this you.
I mean, yeah, but the movie was trying to put you into that uncomfortable spot in order to then extract the comedy out of it. So, like, that's the whole thing. The movie is like not so much a story as it was a collection of ridiculous scenes that then led up to an end, which is fine. I mean, that's the, I mean, it's not like really, man, that shit was whack, dog. Like, you know, I mean, it's not, it wasn't whack, but it's like, I don't know. It was just all right, not great. It was cool. I wish we had a better movie. I wish we would have all gotten together to see Avatar, Way of Water, which is a singular cinematic experience that you guys would have all left change. Let me tell you what happens in this bitch. So they got a fucking whale.
We are not doing this.
That can talk to like the other whales, and he's an outcast. And just at the end, when you think he's fucked up, whoosh, right into your face. You know what I'm saying? That's cinema, as Jomie would say. This was cool.
It was cool, or was it whack? Cool. Which one?
I was whack.
It definitely wasn't a love story.
You didn't like that.
They kissed like one time. Like the chemistry between them.
You want to see them fuck.
Well, no.
Whoa.
Was it?
You didn't get enough Jonah. Look how he's looking at him. You didn't get enough Jonah Hill. What?
You, Matt, you didn't get to ask that question.
No, I knew it was coming.
I just feel like there was no chemistry between them. And I feel like when you are, it's bad enough when you are two black black people getting together, your parents are driving you crazy when you're getting married. Like, you have, you want to, like, you're into that person and you are, like, fighting because you're into that person and they had no chemistry at all. So I just.
Rachel, what was it like to marry a white man?
Okay, let me answer your question.
What? Funny.
I struggled with the love story too. And I think because it wasn't believable, and I'm not saying because it was Lauren London and it was Jonah Hill, they seemed to get along, but they seemed like homies more than they seemed like there was a level of intimacy there. It just, the feet... You know what I mean? We were supposed to watch them play feet and think that was, there was a sexual encounter after that. That didn't really sit well with me. And also being in an interracial relationship, now my husband's not Jewish, and I know that the whole, look at you, the whole thing in this movie is black and Jewish relations. So it was different, but I didn't have these type of awkward, weird conversations. Yeah. So I can't really relate to whether it seemed very forced and that they were trying too hard to create these awkward moments. So it didn't relate to me in any way necessarily being in an interracial relationship. But I agree with you. I thought the love story was not believable in any way. And I'm pretty convinced that the kiss at the end was CGI. Yeah.
Wow. Let me be serious for a second. So I have a fundamental issue with something that's like going on in films now. The movies that I used to watch back in my day, the movies that I would watch growing up and the movies that I really came to love were films that were about people that were in situations. And you understood who these people were and what their motivations were and what the point of the movie was through story, right? I was in a screenwriting class one time. The guy was teaching a class who had written Beetlejuice, and he would say that every single time. He's like, I wrote Beetlejuice, nigga. And he showed me this scene where there was no dialogue in the scene, like zero dialogue. But before this person is leaving their house, they put on a sweater. Then they put on a windbreaker. Then they put on a larger coat. Then they put on like a hat. Then they put on a scarf. Then they put on all of this stuff. And when like you open the door, you see people outside in bathing suits. So just from that scene, you know that there's something in that character that tells you. You don't need to hear somebody say, oh, he's so off. Like, they show it to you. And I think a lot of times what happens in movies like this is they start preaching to you and start saying, hey, you're black, but I never held that against you. It was something deep, deep, deep down in me that won't let me come to grips with you and whatever. And then every scene starts to be like that until we get to like a surprise wedding at the end. I'm like, it just doesn't work like that. The movie was funny at points, but it was preachy and it was trying to drive home the message that, shout out to Kenya, love him. He's been trying to drive home for a little while that black people and white people can be okay together. We get you, brother. Do a Marvel joint. Change. But I think now everyone wants like something from the movies that we watch, right? Everybody wants something. Everything has to have a message. Write a good story about some crazy, funny people and then let it go. I wrote a movie I produced a movie where a black man was killed 150 times and his blood pooled in the shape of Africa and the white people said, hey, give you an Oscar. You know, right? So I understand that this is kind of like, oh, thank you. One person decide. But I'm just saying, it's like, I'm just saying at this point, I would have rather watched a movie about their actual love story.
Exactly.
Than about like their parents and all of those things that really don't happen, man.
They don't happen. It doesn't happen like that.
Yeah, there was a surprise wedding at the end. Like, you know.
And you knew that was coming.
I knew all of it was coming.
Let me ask you, this movie was written 3 years ago and filmed 3 years ago, and they didn't change any of it based off of what has happened, you know, with Kanye and everything else. They actually thought that the movie was going to get canned because of everything that was going on. And still, despite all of it, they kept the script original as it was. Were there any parts, I'm curious for you guys, that you thought maybe they should have changed? Maybe they should have taken out? Because there's a moment when everyone laughed and I thought people would like clutch their pearls at this one scene. When they said that they needed to make the ring look more Holocausty.
Oh.
And they needed to dirty it up.
All of it was very, like, intentionally corny, intentionally.
You knew it.
Holocausty. All of it was intentional. I think what.
Intentionally holocausty. Alright, that was nice to meet you guys. Cut the lights off. Y'all ain't about to get me out this motherfucker. Who's hey, cut that shit. Richie?
All it was just to make, because I never felt it uncomfortable.
Never?
And through that whole movie, I was really stuck when Lauren London and the Nipsey Hussle, and I was like getting emotional just seeing her. But I never felt uncomfortable. I never felt like I thought it was straight up just trying to be, maybe it would have made white people uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
I think
probably
it
did make white people, but intentionally to make them uncomfortable.
It was cool. It was cool. And it's hard to bag on a movie because you want to see her do well. And that's another thing. Like, it's so good to see her. You know what I mean?
She was great in it.
Yeah, she was really good in it. She was really good in it. I just, you know, you got Eddie Murphy, man. Let Eddie cook. You know, I don't know.
But he didn't want to.
It was cool.
He was supposed to play the role of the reserved, more serious. He enjoyed that. He got to be something different. That's the role he wanted to play.
Yeah. They burned his goofy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, it's like, okay, cool. Y'all got questions? Spit them out. Let's go. What are we talking about? Q&A.
So, Rachel Green, how do you hear your apology rating for the apologies they actually gave?
That's a good question. Now, these were good apologies. I don't know if everyone heard the question, but he asked, what's my apology rating? These were good apologies.
Mm-hmm.
I would give these north of 7, somewhere 7, I mean 8, maybe even a 9. These were good apologies.
Have you ever heard a 10? Like, is there an apology?
Ooh.
I haven't found one yet.
Y'all think about that. Like, what's the best apology we've ever heard?
I gotta think about that.
Who gave the best apology?
But these were good.
Who think about that?
Of course, they were scripted.
The best apology is what? You've been watching Fix Your Life.
A good point, though.
It is a good point, but like, yeah, you know, we can't really go by that metric because we don't be like in a nigga life every day. We need to know the notes app. Who gave the best notes app shit? Who came back and said, I'm the best? Who's the best apology? Who else has got a question? It can be about anything, doesn't have to be about this movie. I'm ready to put it behind me.
They came for the movie.
I'm ready to move on with life.
At the top.
Okay.
You wanted it to go there. You were leading everybody past the movie back to Twitter.
No, can't be right. Like, this is the only thing about the movie. All gravy. Shout out to Netflix. Shout out to Kenya.
We will answer
and everybody.
The question.
We'll answer the question. But we're not about to sit here and talk about that bitch for the next 20 minutes like it's the Godfather. You know what I mean? Shit was cool. Dope. Hope everybody got paid. Shout out Netflix. We appreciate y'all. Kenya. Everything good. Let's talk about Twitter. So is everybody abreast on what happened today?
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. You could be doing anything this week, right? You've got work, errands, friends, and a whole lot of fun in between. That's why the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the capable SUV that's built for your life. With premium interiors, available wireless charging, and room for your whole cargo and crew. Okay, Hyundai. Visit HyundaiUSA.com to learn more about the all-new 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh, how so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit, or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Is there a way that we could put the
can
tweets?
Can we put the tweets up?
Is there a way we could do that?
Donnie, you have to get your laptop. Don't worry about it. Okay, so this is what happened.
Donnie's off the clock.
This is what happened. And I'll be, you guys know me. I'll be serious. This is what happened. Obviously, Emmanuel Acho came on the podcast. Did you hear that? When he came on the podcast. Okay. And we left. whatever. It went left. I've heard criticism on both sides, and that's fair. Call Rachel, and I say to Rachel, look, should I post clips from the podcast?
Correct.
Rachel, what was your answer?
I said, what's your intention behind it? Like, what kind of response are you trying to generate by posting those clips?
Okay. In that case, my co-host was right. Didn't need to promo the episode or purposely try to make him look bad or expose it to people who haven't seen it. Because, you know, it wasn't something that I was like super jazzed about after it happened. I said everything I needed to say, but it wasn't like, let's wait. Everyone sees what Van said, whatever. Yesterday, somebody is having a conversation with Emmanuel Acho. This is after we've done another podcast. It's like a week after this shit is over.
Full week.
Yeah. And they say something about the comment that he made about, you know, not having any generational trauma, whatever. And he said that one of the co-hosts reached and that he didn't really insinuate that or anything like that. So I posted the clip. The end. And now, nigga, people did what I knew that they would do if they posted the clip. And by the way, I am not in any way reveling in the fact that he's getting kicked in his nuts like that. Because if we're being honest, that's probably a net negative. When we're having conversations about forward moving progress, it's always better if someone can leave feeling whole and not pulled apart and shredded apart. That's a fact, if it's possible. However, in this specific situation, like, there's a lesson here.
Absolutely, there's a lesson.
You
Well, this is, and we kind of talked about this a little bit on the podcast, and this is why I have such a problem with I have a lot of problems. I really had to debate whether or not I asked you, like, should I respond to the tweet? And the reason, if you haven't seen the tweets, Emmanuel is using my friendship, our friendship, and weaponizing it against Van and using it to further the narrative. And what's disappointing about this, and this is what I was saying that we alluded to on the podcast in our conversation after, is that this could have been such a good conversation. This could have been the conversation that he needed to have with Black people. You do a whole series about Black people, but you never sat down and talked to Black people about how they feel about it. Because what I was telling him off mic is that I don't know one Black person who's okay with the way you're doing it. Nobody's questioning your intention, at least initially, but they have an issue with the method. And so I felt like at the end of the podcast, we took responsibility that things got intense, that things went left. There's been no accountability on his end, which is what's bothering me. All he's trying to do is prove a point on Twitter, which is why I think so many people are attacking him for what he did. I don't like, if you've seen the tweets, and this is what I wanted to respond to, is that he's talking to me like I'm about me, like I'm a damsel in distress. Like Van silenced me and Van manipulated me into having my friend come on the podcast so he could come at him. And that's not the case. What also bothers me is this was a week ago. I have talked to Emmanuel Thursday, ran into him Saturday and had a full conversation, and also talked to him on Monday. This was put to bed. It was done. I have no idea why he decided to go on Twitter and bring all of this back up again. And now here we are with him trending on Twitter, and it seems like everybody is jumping in on it. Black Twitter's trending again.
Yeah.
Because Black Twitter's was coming at him, and this is not how this needed to be. It really could have been something great. It really could have been that.
With what's happening in Memphis right now and with the release of the video tonight, I'm sure you guys are all aware of what's going on. It's important to be intentional about the conversations that you have and the power of the conversations. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Prior to me meeting Emmanuel Acho, I just had a problem intellectually with things that are said. Okay. There's a way that I look at freedom and justice and how those things make people feel whole. And I would challenge anyone in this room to think of a time in history when freedom was given. When someone just went, I've fucked over you for long enough. Here you go. Now, if we talk about the French Revolution, the people stormed the castle and cut the head off the king. If we're talking about the Haitian Revolution, Toussaint and Bookman killed. Not just, they didn't just kill their slavers. They killed the black upper middle class that would have prevented them from a full revolution. They did exactly what they had to do. If you talk about this country, built on a revolution from people who they thought were oppressing them. I'm not talking about violence here. I'm not talking about actual violence. What I'm talking about is an understanding of what it takes to wrestle freedom. And anything short of that is a half measure. And that's a fact. And it doesn't matter whether or not it just is. History has rewritten stories of people that had peaceful methods, and they've made it seem like those methods were non-confrontational. It's not true. It's just not. And so prior to having the conversation with him, I just thought he was a guy that thought he was going to hold hands with enough white people to end racism. And that is quaint in a way. It's like almost kind of like, you know people like that. The kids in high school that would wear those khaki hats and curve like that and hang around with white boys. And, you know, I used to always judge them. I'd be like, nigga, what you wearing that for? But after having had the conversation with them, and after all of this, I'll be honest with you. I think he's 1,000% full of shit. Like, in every way. I think he is brilliant because he recognized the hole in the marketplace after the death of George Floyd. And that hole in the marketplace was someone to pat white people on the back when everybody in the world was, when I say white people, let me be more specific, pat white supremacy on the back when everybody, because I don't want to individualize, we're talking about systems here, when everybody in the world was demanding answers. And I thought that there would be more substance to a conversation with him because, look, I've been on television for hundreds of hours. I've said thousands of words. There's nothing that strikes at the core of my intellectual belief that you can question me about that I can't engage you on.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Well, it's never been challenged, not publicly at least. I can't speak to any private conversations that he's had. But that's why this could have been so great. It's never been challenged publicly. He's never been questioned. He's never had to face the conversations that he's had. He can always speak to it in the exact way that he was speaking to us. You get more bees with honey than you do with vinegar. And some people will take that. That wasn't the type of conversation that we were ready to have. This is what I will say, because I was there at the beginning when he started Uncomfortable Conversations.
Okay.
The intention at the beginning, and I know because I was talking to him, that first video, he wasn't trying to solve racism. He really, I don't like the way you're looking at me. He really was trying to just talk, right? What he didn't anticipate, mm-hmm, is that it would take on the life that it did and people would respond that way. And then I believe he got in over his head, and he was not equipped to have those type of conversations in those circles with those people. And that's why I asked him to go back to something that you were saying, right? If the goal is the same, right? If the goal is the same for freedom, to end racism, to get to a better place. The last question I asked him was, here we are 2.5 years removed from when you started Uncomfortable Conversations. Have things been better? Have things gotten better? How have your conversations helped? And if they haven't, then either they need to stop or you need to restructure how you're having these conversations. That's what I wanted him to see. Like, can we talk about that? If your heart is pure, if that is really your intention, if that's really your goal and you're not accomplishing it, well, we got to start over. But you don't think that that's his goal, which is what you're saying. And I, because I know where the what the original idea was, how do you get back to there? And I think we're so far removed from it, I don't know if we ever can.
I want to make it a bigger conversation now so we can like stop harping on one person, but I just can't get this image out of my head. It's 2020. He's seen everything that's going on. He's in his fucking home gym. He's like, fuck this shit.
That's not what happened.
I got something for these motherfuckers. Ain't nobody ever tried this shit before. I'm the man. Emmanuel, what are you doing? I'm on 400 push-ups, dog. I'm going to talk to these motherfuckers. What color should the background be? Let's take everything away. Let's
How are you
going to
be like, I don't want to harp on one person and then do this whole thing?
Let's make it white. Drop me into the middle. Uncomfortable conversations with a black man. Should we call it, should we say nigger? Is that too much? Everything they say about me is true. I'll just let y'all know. Everything they say about me is true. I'm emotional. I'm angry. I get super mad when I read y'all comments, like super pissed off. Like what?
Who's in the Reddit?
Who's in the Reddit on here?
Who's a soulless jackal? Don't be scared.
See, that tells you something right there. It's good people. Everything they say about me is true. I'm not the guy. I'm not the one that's going to ever be... It's not going to happen. I'm not going to be the one that's going to be someplace and lead a revolution of people or be an activist of any specific importance. That's not going to happen because I just get mad. I punch the wall. I come back and I go, fuck you and the deal. But the reality is for me, all of this stuff is like real. Like my mind is got so many cobwebs in it that like I don't get a chance to distance myself from what's happening. Like I don't get a chance to like not over engage in every single thing. Kalika's right up there. Say hello. Everyone say hello to Kalika. Like Kalika knows I'll sit down and I'll be like, oh, I want to know how a plane flies. And the next thing you know, I'll just be in the, like on the couch with Bozeman. It's like the 15th video of watching planes fly. And it's like people landing all over the world and stuff like that. I just get into it. And to be honest with you, because of the fact that we've been at home, I've internalized black trauma like that. I mean, I've the people that raised me was talking to my mom today. Like the people that raised me was old people, like from South Louisiana that were just intimately acquainted with their second class citizen status. Who taught me how to navigate a world where your skin was like a mark for death. Like you drive by plantations and they're like, oh, these hang niggas from trees like that. And you're talking about like, you know, this is the hole that my Big Papa, rest in peace, Big Papa, he had a house, one of the first black landowners in South Louisiana, and there's a hole in the middle of the living room. Where you can go down there if the Klan comes. Like if the Klan comes, boop, pop the thing, go down there, hang out, pistol down there until they leave. They burn everything up, they do whatever they do. So like there's terrorism, it's like it's real. So we're gonna talk about it. I'm not any better than Emmanuel Acho. I haven't like no conversation that I've had has made anybody change. Like we've all been talking. We've all been talking and doing the best that we can, and it's worse than ever, but it's just the one way that I know doesn't work, the one thing that I know doesn't work is trying to appeal to the better nature of your oppressor. Like that's the, we could try boycotts. We could try getting together. We could try to filmmake our way out of it. We could try to art our way out of it. Art has been incredibly, but the one thing I know doesn't work is just to go, please stop. You know what I mean?
Because it seems like a part of uncomfortable conversations is to make white people feel comfortable. And that's never going to accomplish anything. Think about it.
Well, it's not even just white. It's like whoever is fucking like you guys, you know, if you have vacation days and shit, I used to work TMZ, they used to, you know, you couldn't get vacation. You just couldn't get vacation. Van, you're too important to the show. Okay. I know. It's okay. We can't let you go. We love you. You know, go in there and try to ask them, yo, seriously, like, this is really important to me that I could be like, can I please have this off? No. You have to be to a certain point where they feel like you're going to fuck them over. Like, when I became a big deal, I'd be like, fuck it. I just won't come to work. I ain't got no van on the TV show and I'll stay gone. I need my vacation days. She knows. We're trying to go to Grenada, hang out with Charlamagne and them. It's like, they're not going to do it. You have to take what you want. You know what I mean? You have to take it. All right. We've talked about this too much. Anybody else got any other questions? What?
Well, okay. I know we talked about this too much, but I do want to say, one, I do appreciate you challenging him, because y'all know when you have a platform, you're accountable, and he has people listening to him. And this is dangerous. The things he's doing, I feel like, are very detrimental. I saw one of the tweets, he said the word hostile, I think, basically calling Black people hostile. So I feel like somebody needs to do something, because he's out here with this narrative, and it's harmful. So
Rachel,
I appreciate that.
Thank you very much, sister. I appreciate you. Give her a round of applause. Rachel, your friend, you have the best intentions. Fuck that shit, man. Everybody I bring on the podcast gets criticized. I bring on, like, all the people I know is real niggas. You know what
I'm saying? We should talk. Well, no, that's how he came on the podcast. I know that that's also something that was going on Twitter, and he was like, he was duped and he was tricked and lured, I believe is the word that he used. The bottom line is, we had already put this to bed.
I need 240 pounds.
We have put this to bed because it was a miscommunication. He knew, like, we thought he was coming on for one thing. He thought he was coming on for something else. But what you don't know is if you listen to the podcast, we really haven't talked about him in a positive way. And I have always called him and given him the heads up of, like, listen, this is what we talked about on the podcast. So he knew where we were coming from. But the reason he came on is, I don't know if y'all remember this episode where Van was like, I'm tired of getting kicked down because of my friends that come on and do reckless things on the podcast. I'm only having Rachel's friends come on. He was like, bring out one of the Achos. So that's how we got Emmanuel. And then that's how we got Stephen A. Smith, which was a great conversation.
Let's keep it all the
night
way.
Night and day. It was an example of how things should go. You can be on. Let me ask you this. If you hadn't had the conversation with Emmanuel, do you think you would have been as calm with Stephen A. Smith?
So there's a thing about Stephen A. Smith. There's an authenticity there. And that's the thing. I was with Cap this morning. I went and saw him. And there's like a real, it's very important for me for Colin Kaepernick to play in the NFL again. It's very important to me because it's a loss to me that I don't feel like the culture needs to take. I say that to say that Stephen A. Smith was someone who stood in the gap, it seemed like, for that, right? But he's confident and he's real and he's there for it, and he's not a victim intellectually. So in that situation, I don't have to agree with everyone. I'm not gonna cry. He disarmed me. Like, we had a conversation. Questions were answered, questions were asked, and we talked about it. Do I still believe that, like, everything there was completely the way that he said it was? No. But I think that he believes that it is. I don't think Stephen A. Smith thinks that he's biased in any way. No. I might have a different opinion of it. I don't think he thinks he's biased in any way. And that's all you can ask for. You know, I'm not a fucking attack dog just looking for different Black men. Arr, I need a coon leg. Arr. You know what I mean? I'm really not. But it was good. It was cool. I think
it's a great conversation.
Yeah. So, you know.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
As a plant-based cheese company, Daiya has never talked about beef in an ad before, because someone somewhere once had a beef with saying beef and plant-based together. So putting a slice of Daiya cheese on a beef burger, not okay. Well, our delicious melty cheese has a beef with your beef about beef, because any step towards plant-forward eating is a step in the right direction. Daiya, 100% plant-based, even if you're not. Now made with Daiya Oat Cream Blend.
So whatever, who else? Come on, keep them coming. God damn it, Donnie. Look at Donnie.
Gotta pick
everybody, look at Donnie's hair.
Thank you. All right.
Feet in engineering.
So I still don't watch the NFL after like all the cap stuff and whatnot, mm-hmm. but it's really difficult. Like if it's on somewhere, if I'm at a bar or something and it's on, I'm definitely going to pay attention, but I like intentionally try not to watch because of that. And I like hear you all talk about it all the time and like talk about Black people and our progressiveness and like how we should have taken a stronger stand. How do you like deal with that within yourself? Like your decision to continue to watch the NFL is something that's also difficult for me, but like, how do you justify it within yourself? What do you tell
when you stop watching the NFL?
It was before we met, probably.
No.
Or like right around the time we met. So probably 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. Maybe longer than
that. What team does Josh Allen play for?
Josh Allen, isn't he from Minnesota?
Okay, he does not watch.
You don't watch.
You don't.
I don't pay attention to get you.
Yeah, you.
I mean,
really
I still like keep up with you. Stuff. If I don't like,
I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm a hypocrite.
I think that is great that you do that. We both are. I watch every Cowboys game, and he's a racist owner. I know. Like I mean, we are hypocrites. We talk about this.
See though, see how I can separate because I watch the team, but Rachel watched the worst team.
I'm from Texas, and I hate the Cowboys. So
the Cowboys. Look, this nigga is the realest.
Nah.
Yeah.
Yo, you know what? You know what really happened? The pandemic happened, man. And like when the pandemic happened, I wasn't watching at all. I will say that there are certain people, you know, they ask you not to watch, and then you on FaceTime with them, and you hear touchdown in the back, and you be like, "Nigga, okay." But the pandemic happened, and for some reason, the return to sports—it's an excuse—but for some reason, the return to sports was something that was comforting and calming. Like when they got back into the bubble. My stupid ass was like, God damn, the world can't end if the Pacers playing the Jazz. You know what I mean? And so I started watching football again, too. So that's what happened. And, you know, the whole world did.
We kind of talked about this on the podcast because we were talking about Rihanna doing the Super Bowl. And we were talking about people moving past it. I never said that I wasn't going to watch the NFL. Mm-hmm. I understand the hypocrisy in it. You know, we talk about the NFL, we talk about, you know, their stance and the way that they have mishandled Colin Kaepernick and even the way they've handled other issues when it comes to Black people, but I still watch the game. I think when you and I have a different stance on Colin Kaepernick, I don't understand why he wants to go back and play. And we've talked about this before. We talked about it on the pod. I think when he got his settlement, I kind of was like, I'm going to keep watching the NFL. I guess I applaud Colin Kaepernick. I understand he wants to be back in the league. I understand that's what he wants. I don't necessarily understand that for him, but I applaud the other things that he's doing and the way that he has used his platform. And I see him thriving in other ways. And I guess I just kind of compartmentalize that and have moved on. Moved on from him.
No, I get it.
Not moved on from him at all.
So I think there's a couple of different points that can be made here. One is the power of the collective voice. Obviously, history tells us, you know, we talked about it, that solidarity and unity and group operations is like the key to moving anything forward. I mean, solidarity is really all you have. And we have examples. We have the Montgomery bus boycott. We have all kinds of different examples of people being able to bring businesses to their knees through the power of their collective will. This is what I would say about Colin Kaepernick or anybody. Colin Kaepernick's problem or struggle with the NFL is emblematic of most Black Americans who I know that work at jobs. Most Black Americans who I know that work at jobs feel at some point, if they're not talented, and sometimes if they are, that their job is marginalizing them, overlooking them, treating them differently, or boxing them out because they're Black. For any of those people, it would be a lot easier for them to leave the job, right? But the reality is, in America, the systems that we are tapped into are deeply rooted. There's not one industry in America that's not racist. 0%. Every single industry in America is racist. Every single industry in this country was built on capitalism fueled by slavery and the transatlantic slave trade. And there's not one part of America's society that wasn't touched. That's the newspapers you read. That's the convenience stores that you shop at. That's the food. That's pharmacy. That's all of it. All of it comes from the blood of Africans. 1,000%. So, you know, that's not in any way to like sort of strawman the argument, but it's to say that for him to continue to want to participate in the NFL, which essentially owns an American day of the week, is the same reason why we continue to participate in America. When you boil it down, we do because this is our life. He's been playing a game since he was 7, 8 years old. He loves football. The only place that he can play football at the level that he played it at was in the NFL. And he thinks that, like,
he can play football in other places. I get it's not the NFL, but if he loves the game, there are other ways to play football.
I've brought this up. Here's the thing, though. Once you've been to the Super Bowl as the quarterback and you want to compete at the highest level, I understand what you're saying is true. What I would say, though, is why should he have to take the loss?
Well, I will never understand what Colin Kaepernick went through. I will never understand that. But he stood for what he believed in. He created a movement. Then he stood up to that corporation. Mm-hmm. He won. They had to settle with him. They had to admit that they colluded against him and Eric Reed. We always forget to name Eric Reed.
Eric.
And he won and is taking that money and creating businesses and putting out documentaries and doing things to further the cause. And I love that and I appreciate that. I just don't understand why he would want to go back to this corporation that wronged him, admitted to wronging him, and he wants to go back and play for them. It's not like he's going back to own a team. He's going to go back and play for them. He compared the NFL to slavery. Why would you want to go back and be a slave? I just don't understand it.
Well, I mean, there's a simple answer. Because he wants to.
Okay,
Let me tell you what I mean by that. Is that there's the part of the thing that we're all talking about is the want to. Like, part of what we're talking about is what you feel like you need to do. Like, part of it is the want to. Part of it is just in my estimation, and we'll have them on and talk about it. Part of it, in my estimation, is just also stubbornness. There's
I shouldn't
have to give my career up for bringing awareness to the slaughter of black people. I shouldn't have to make that trade.
He shouldn't.
And I also think, for me, that's part of the thing that kind of gets into my brain, because as I said in with the whole thing when we talked to Emmanuel, is that like there's a laundry list of people who have stood up for not just black people, but just poor people, anybody that had less, right? And there are also a list of poor outcomes. The only way to start turning power really is to change that. Fred Hampton is talking about wherever there's people, there's power. Yeah, but whatever there's people that want to be powerful, there's power.
Can I ask you this?
Yes.
So if Colin Kaepernick wants to be back in the league, should we stop watching the NFL?
You don't have to.
Well, I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, can we, if he can go back, if he can go back to it, can we start watching it again?
No, I mean, this is my thing. My thing is, you know, I think there would have to be some, when you're doing something, there have to be hard lines and you have to simplify things so that people understand them. And anything that's in the weeds gives people an out, because we're talking about hardship, right? If I'm going to ask you to walk to work and you work as a bus driver, I'm probably not going to walk to work. You know what I mean? So when you're looking for something like that from people, it probably has to be a little bit more simple. But to me, I think that it's incumbent upon people with platforms to understand that his struggle to get back into to his life's work is not just one man's struggle to play football again. It's one man's struggle not to be professionally executed for leading a freedom movement.
Right.
And to me, that's more important. Hey, man, like, I don't have any problem with watching football. At one point, I was on that, but I think there's still things that can be done to help him get back on the field. And I just think for people to say he took a settlement, you know, he was in a workplace dispute with the NFL. The workplace dispute, he got some money. I'm glad that – I don't know how much it was or anything like that. But I just think it's important that he plays again. I do. Anybody else got questions?
Let's take two more. We got one right here.
Two more.
Yeah. Thanks for hosting, by the way. I appreciate that. One of the questions I have, I mean, obviously the conversation around Emmanuel Acho was very nuanced. There's a lot of stuff there. What would it take to have a conversation again in 6 months, 9 months, 12? You know, what would it take?
We talked about this. Van is open to it.
Yeah.
I say no. And from my conversation, and I haven't talked to Emmanuel today, but from my last conversation with him, he doesn't want to either. Okay. And I just, to answer your question, I don't see it ever moving past where it is right now. And that is very evident in the way that he's responding to things on Twitter. When I talked about, we took accountability and, okay, you know, there was miscommunication. Oh, it was a little intense. Maybe Van shouldn't have said that or whatever. We did that. On his end, there's no meeting us in the middle. So I just don't ever see how there can be a meaningful conversation unless both parties are willing to come to the table and have a genuine conversation about it and be open to how do we have this productive conversation about some of the issues we have with uncomfortable conversations. I just don't ever see any type of concession coming on his end. And I'm saying this as his friend, because he likes to throw that out a lot. So does Van. As his friend, I don't see him doing that. I just don't. Not so, after the behavior I saw in the last 24 hours.
So for me, it's not a big deal at all to have the conversation. I would put him back on the podcast, like, or I would be down for him to come back on next week, or I don't care. So, and another reason is because I don't think that I'm any better than him. Like, I worked at TMZ for 9 years. Basically 10 years. And in the 9 years I was at TMZ, look, there was a time when I first got on television and I was happy to be there. And I was happy to be a black guy on TMZ. I was happy to have a rapper get shout out with TMZ and everybody go. Like, I felt like there were definitely times where you can look at me on television and be like, what's that nigga doing? You know what I'm saying? Because you get to a place and you're overwhelmed by the fact that people are paying attention to you. And you sometimes feel like, okay, there's a question that you have to ask yourself if you would trade power in this town to be depowered as a black man. Like, if you would make that trade. Like, if you would say, hey, I'll be powerful in the town. If you would trade that for being small. And if you recognize that, do you have to confront it? You know? And for me, I've never been weak in that area, but there was a point where I went, like, yo, pump your brakes and tell these motherfuckers in this room, like, what's up? They're playing a little bit too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, make sure that they know that you are not the nigga to play with. That was the first thing. Then the second thing was, that's not enough. It was, you had to be there and actually have an impact on some of the stuff. Now, you could look at a lot of the things that they did over course of years and say that probably didn't happen, and it doesn't seem like that, but if I told you some of the stories that weren't run or some of the things that didn't go, you know, you just have to be that person if you're one of the only black persons, people there. So I say all that to say that this, to me, could have — Emmanuel Acho could be fucking in a year, in 2 years, it could be the Acho and Umar show. It could be Acho and Umar, like, going around. Like, I don't know what his future holds. I can't judge his soul or what he might be doing his best. So I don't have a problem with that. But right now it's on the fuck shit. And it really doesn't seem like he wants to hear any criticism on it or any even have any uncomfortable conversations. So it's a dub. But I would have no problem bringing them back and no problem actually like having a conversation about what went wrong the first time and trying to get to a better place.
But both people have to do it. And that's the problem.
Yeah. I mean, cool. Run the fade, nigga. I'm just joking. It's a joke. It's a joke.
All right. Last question.
When are we getting Animal Games back?
Oh, wow.
Donnie's been working on it. Donnie, is there an update?
Stay tuned. Very soon.
Why y'all acting like Animal Games is fucking Detox from Dr. Dre? It's a segment we could do like right now if we wanted to.
No,
like we could eat like what? Like what? Donnie, what's the hold up with Animal Games, dog?
To be real with you,
sure.
The plan is for Animal Games to come back in February.
Oh, because we have a special treat with Animal Games.
Exactly. There's something in the books that we got in our back pocket that we're going to release in February.
Do you know what this is?
You were a part, of it.
What are you talking about?
What are we talking? I don't know. What?
There's a pro.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The whole thing. I forgot about that. Yeah. We're bringing it back with a bang.
I have a question for you guys last, and then we got to go. Do you guys have any suggestions for the show? What do you like? What works? What doesn't?
Good question.
Yeah.
Me and Thought wearing t-shirts.
First, you got to take off that 49ers. Like, that's disrespectful right now.
Hey, bruh, you gonna let her talk? They ran. Hold on for a second. Bruh, Faithful, she can't talk to you. They put Zeke at center and ran this motherfucker over.
Do it.
Like, she can't talk to you about the Niners, dog. To tell her, like, they embarrassed
That's
themselves.
When I should have stopped watching the NFL, was that game.
Don't put the people you love at center. That's
I love Pollard. Right. Thank you. Yes, hook 'em horns. Oh, Acha.
All right, we want to tell you guys how much we love you and how much we care about you guys as fans and how much we're excited that the podcast has grown like it is. We'll do more little meetups like this, but we are going to one day have a full-blown live show, and that's going to be a big deal. You know what I mean? Come out there. Maybe this Maybe that's when we'll bring Acho back for the live show.
Maybe that would be great.
Yeah.
We'll definitely have a special guest.
Yeah.
But this has been fun. I feel so comfortable talking. I feel like we've done this before. Like we've been doing this, right? Which is the whole feel of the entire podcast. We want you to feel like you're cozying up, listening to your favorite sibling argue and go at it with each other. Y'all remember the family meeting?
It's funny. That was like
that was a real
Kalika.
Thing. That was a real thing.
Kalika, how hot was I about the family meeting?
You're pretty hot about the family meeting. You didn't appreciate it.
And then the thing I love about when me and Rachel get into it is we never do a post-mort. We get into it on a podcast, and then on the next podcast, pretend like it didn't happen. And people on the Reddit are like, are they going to address it? Fuck you guys.
We moved on. But no, this has been great.
Give yourselves a round of applause,
guys.
Thank
you so much for being here. Yeah. Let's do a picture.